Good morning and welcome to Launch. We're broadcasting live from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm Ron Reardon, and I'm joined in the studio with our producer, Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee. How are you doing this fine Thursday?
I am doing awesome. How was your, St. Patrick's Day?
It was a quiet one for me, but I'm sure that both of my sons enjoyed it thoroughly for me.
Where do they go? Ireland?
No, they're over in Birmingham. But, yeah, they always, their birthday is actually today.
Oh.
And so they always kind of celebrate St. Patrick's Day, you know, in anticipation of their birthday being the very next day.
There you go.
Okay, well, you know, on Launch, Lee, we feature inventors, innovators, entrepreneurs, providing our listeners with the opportunity to learn from both the successes and the failures of launching an idea and the journey that follows. You know, this morning we're going to be featuring Chris Pilatos of Verdant Energy Solutions. But before we get started, Lee, could you thank our sponsors?
Absolutely. Today's show sponsor is Patents & More. Patents & More is protecting your innovation and connecting you to the resources you need for success.
Okay. And, you know, Chris Pilatos has got over, our guest today, has got over 29 years of experience in the energy field, the last seven of which have been exclusively devoted to pursuing green energy initiatives. You know, he's an EE major from the State University of New York at Stony Brook. He's worked at a variety of energy companies, and back in May of 2008, Chris founded Verdant Energy Solutions. Welcome to the studio, Chris.
Well, thank you very much, gentlemen, for having a Greek on the show this close to St. Patty's Day.
That's right. Okay, that's the nice thing about the United States. It's the melting pot of many, many cultures.
That's right.
Yeah, I think even the American Indians were immigrants at one time, coming in from Russia over the Strait of whatever it's called up there. Verdant Energy Solutions, I know that they do BioCo, but what in the world is BioCo, and why are you so passionate about its prospects?
Well, thanks, Ron. Yeah, BioCo is an alternative fuel to fossil coal, which is derived from 100% renewable resource like trees or agricultural wastes like corn stalks. The use of BioCo will significantly reduce the carbon footprint of power plants, cement manufacturing, and other coal-burning industries. And these industries generate about 40% of the man-made greenhouse gases. So utilizing biocoal in lieu of fossil coal can help mitigate the effects of climate change and buy us the time we need to develop long-term alternative forms of energy.
What's the reason to call it coal at all? Like, what's the definition? Can you define some terms?
Sure. We call it biocoal to contrast it to fossil coal. Our biocoal is really what coal was 300 million years ago. It's, in other words, it's biomass material that has not been compressed for 300 million years at intense pressures and time duration. So that's why we call it biocoal. And the reason we do that is utilities tend to be somewhat conservative in nature, and the fuels that they're used to is coal. So we're better off using the same kind of terminology and distinguishing ourselves from the biomass portion of it.
So it's kind of a comfort factor for the your target market then.
Exactly.
But I see it as kind of a double-edged sword in the sense that it's coal has kind of a bad reputation amongst consumers, but I guess in the industry you have to use the terms that they're familiar with.
Yeah, and it has received somewhat of a black eye, and we see Verdant Energy Solutions as kind of a knight in shining armor coming to the rescue of the coal industry, per se, because there are stringent laws going into effect reducing the amount of greenhouse gases that a coal-burning power plant can emit, and yet the technology is not there to comply with those laws. So utilities in good faith back in the 50s and 60s invested trillions of dollars in infrastructure to serve our energy needs. And through the stroke of the pen risk from legislation, they're being mandated to reduce the very output of the commodity that we need, which is energy. So we see ourselves in a knight in shining armor and providing them a replacement fuel that they can use in their existing infrastructure, which allows them to comply with reduced greenhouse gas emissions. And that's why we think we're so well-positioned currently.
Well, yeah, I know green has been a real buzzword nowadays. And when you start talking about renewable, sustainable fuel alternatives, then that's obviously, you know, the trend. But what was the genesis of your involvement in the green and alternative energy field?
That's a great question, Ron. Fresh out of college, I joined a local utility company on Long Island in New York. And as part of the orientation for new employees, we got a tour of the control room where they run the bulk power system of Long Island that serves about 3.5 million customers. And after seeing all those control panels and meters and computers, I was hooked because it reminded me of some high-tech sci-fi movie set, and I was determined to get a job as an electric system operator, which 5 months later I did. I then learned how to operate the bulk power system with the intricacies of its interconnection with neighboring states' power systems. I held that job for about 14 years, and in 1995 got wind that electricity deregulation may happen. I and another employee formed Aquila Energy, and we were hired away to start up an energy trading floor for this Midwestern utility, which was called Aquila Energy. And electricity deregulation did, in fact, happen in 1996. So because we were well-positioned with our fully set up trading floor already in place, you know, we took off, we never looked back, and we emerged as a top five power marketer out of some 300 companies. In 1998, Southern Company was also creating a deregulated energy trading floor, now called Mirant, where all kinds of energy-related commodities were traded, like electricity, natural gas, oil, and air emissions credits. I was lured to Atlanta to help launch that venture, which we also took into the top five. At this point, about after 22 years of work in the energy sector, I slowly began to realize that the way we were meeting our energy demand was ultimately unsustainable. Here's some sobering statistics, Ron. The demand for electricity will double in the next 20 years. We are principally meeting that demand by combusting fossil fuels, which is an admittedly limited resource. Whether or not you want to consider the potential impacts of burning fossil fuels on climate change or not, our world needs alternative forms of energy production and will soon run out of fossil fuels. So about 7 years ago, as I became more aware of the implications of greenhouse gas emissions, I started focusing on ways to reduce CO2 emissions from power plants. At that point, I became the director of carbon compliance, which quickly morphed into the director of alternative fuels at Mirant. So I was in a great position to explore any and all means of making energy from completely renewable resources, like you said, green power. And that's when I discovered the merits of biocoal. Here was a 100% renewable replacement fuel that could help electric generating utilities meet their requirements to lower CO2 emissions, like Lee said before, and it was the least cost solution to boot. So about 2 years ago, after recognizing the importance of these findings and wanting to take biocoal to a much wider audience, I formed Verdant Energy Solutions.
How about that? Well, you know, a lot of our listeners, Chris, are passionate about what they're doing, and they're involved in startups and everything, and they're at different points in their journey. How did you turn your passion into reality? I mean, you know, where are you in the startup process currently?
Well, a few years ago, one of the men that I worked with, one of my colleagues at Mirant, had moved down to Brazil, and he has subsequently purchased 50,000 acres of land down there on which he's growing eucalyptus trees. And this, I want to be crystal clear to the listeners in our audience, that we are not in the business of deforesting rainforests. We are going into regions that have basically decimated land or land that's damaged, and we're doing what's called soil remediation. Then we're planting these eucalyptus trees. So where we are in the process is we have identified a suitable location in Brazil to grow the very feedstock, in this case eucalyptus trees, that's going to become the material that we make biocoal from. And we are very near the end of developing, having that project fully developed, and we're eager to get it launched.
You know, many years ago when I was in college, I used to buy eucalyptus, you know, and put it around the apartment and stuff like that. But I didn't realize that it came from trees.
Yeah, it's an oil from trees, Ron, and it's pretty interesting. There is over 600 species of eucalyptus trees. And the eucalyptus tree, the reason we choose it as an energy crop, it has an interesting feature called coppicing, which means you could cut the tree flush with the ground and it will regrow from the original root wad up to three times. So that will, and from our purposes and our perspective, that's very helpful because the root wad retains about 30% or about a third of the CO2 that the tree takes in. You might remember from your biology 101 days when trees grow up or any biomass grows up and lives, it takes CO2 in, so that CO2 is then sequestered into the root wad and it stays alive.
Yeah, so eucalyptus really makes sense.
It does indeed. It's fast growing, it's plentiful, it's not harmful, and it grows very well in Brazil and many other parts of the world.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. Well, I know that any kind of startup, you know, that's going to require some funds. Where exactly are you in the fundraising process?
Well, we've raised about $250,000 of a $500,000 angel raise so far. So that means that we're looking to raise about another $250,000 to complete our project development in Brazil, you know, to put it in the nice gift wrap thing with a bow on top of it.
Okay. Well, I know that any kind of startup, you know, is always going to run into some barriers and stuff like that. Has it been a kind of a tiptoe through the tulips walk in the park for you, or have you encountered some obstacles, and how'd you overcome them?
Yeah, I think everybody is aware of the two favorites. You know, you need more money than you think, you need more time than you think. So I won't spend any time on that. I would encourage anyone that was formerly in corporate America that you need to have a certain kind of personality to be effective and successful as an entrepreneur. And one of those qualities, I believe, is tenacity. You have to have the ability to look to hang on and keep at it. I'm often encouraged and reminded by Henry Ford, I think, had tried, or no, I'm sorry, it was Thomas Edison had tried 10,000 times before he got the light bulb to work, and we take electricity for granted. I don't think most of us would try an idea 10,000 times, you know, before realizing success or before quitting. So I think that's an important aspect. You're saying about the obstacles. There's been a couple. I think, like, one thing I can recommend to entrepreneurs is one lesson I learned kind of the hard way is to make sure that you have an odd-numbered seats in your board of directors so that any vote has a clear outcome. At one point in my beginnings, we had four board of directors, and that represented some challenges. When some votes were split, then we're looking at each other saying, all right, what do we do now?
You know, flip a coin.
Exactly. So that's an obvious, you know, maybe an obvious one to people that have been in business for themselves already, but that's one I learned.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm past president of the United Inventors Association, and at one time we had an even number of people on the board. On the executive board making decisions, and we'd stalemate. I mean, absolutely nothing would get done. It was just like, you know, two people weren't budging, the other two people weren't budging, and, you know, nothing happened, and that's not good. So I agree, odd number is good.
Yeah, another thing I would say, a quality that I don't think it's spoken of often, that's why I'm going to take the opportunity to mention it now to our listeners, is you need to have good relationship skills. And I think this is a first and foremost to an ingredient for success in getting a company properly launched, because what that'll do, it'll allow you to attract and retain the key personnel that augment the areas which may not be your strengths. So, you know, starting your own company, if you don't have good relationship skills, I would highly encourage you to go out and take some personal development courses in that avenue, because that can have huge dividends down the road. If there's any kind of disputes or disagreements, having those skills are essential to keeping the team together, to keeping the wheels on the cart, as it were.
Yeah, it's almost like as if when you're forming your board, you give everybody a personal autographed copy of Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're right, those relationship skills are necessary. And, you know, also for our listeners, you know, the John Wayne, I'll do it by myself mentality of running a company is long gone, okay? It requires a team, because nobody has all the skills and all the contacts that you need to start something and you know, run it efficiently.
I concur wholeheartedly. I would even go so far as extending your recommendation, Ron, by advising companies, new startup companies, to see what other companies they can also work with to propel the idea forward. You know, it's kind of the micro within the company to working together as a team, and in the macro level, it could be your company working in concert with some other companies to solve a problem or some areas of expertise they have that can augment what your skills are, your company produces, or what services it provides, and combining those in a creative combination to satisfy a need.
Yeah, and that's really important what you said, Chris, because, you know, you can leverage both the contacts of another company and their relationships, but also their credibility. Because, you know, when you're a startup, you know, your credibility is getting pretty close to zero. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows you. You've got no track record. And if you can align with folks that have already got credibility, then you can kind of leverage that. So how do you keep the faith when things get rocky? Because sometimes it's kind of hard to know when do you keep on going with that tenacity and when do you throw in the towel?
That's been a challenge of mine as well. You know, it's been 2 years I've been undergoing this. Of course, when I started, there was not the downturn. The economic downturn had not occurred yet, and that certainly slowed things up. I really would recommend the listeners adopt a long-term view. Set up what it is that you're passionate about. Create a goal and put that goal in like a big poster in your office or on a pin board or something where you can see it daily to remind yourself of the long-term view. In the beginning, I found myself becoming psychically worn out by the emotional highs and lows of every week. You know, 1 week you get a good piece of news and you're on cloud nine. The next week you get something that may have potentially, you know, devastating effects on your efforts, and that you can feel saddened or downtrodden from that. I would recommend that, and the best part I've gotten out of this 2 years so far being not going on my own, has been the ability to be constant by keeping my vigilance on what the long-term effects are. In this case, you know, we're talking about making a difference in this world. We're talking about helping an existing industry evolve into a low-carbon economy, and I think that's crucial.
Now, what about are you getting small victories that keep you motivated to keep going on? Are you seeing any of that? You know, I mean, it seems like such an overwhelming goal, like when you have a goal like this, that sometimes you need little wins to keep you going.
Yeah, Lee, that's true. It is important, and it's almost as if you would say, you know, an entrepreneur by definition is an optimist. It's good to take those small wins and kind of savor them and unhold them like a precious, your favorite candy or your favorite dessert,
right.
You know. And, yeah, I would say, yeah, that's important to do that. By the same token, it doesn't pay to let the obstacles run you into the ground or get you demoralized, because at that point the passion suffers and the frontward drive will fade.
Yeah, you talked about the highs and the lows. When I was first launching my business, I went over to Alabama for an inventors conference, and a successful inventor was there that had launched a product, had his own company, and he starts his presentation by drawing a straight horizontal line on the whiteboard, and he says, "This was my life before, you know, I had the idea and started the company." And then he sat there and he drew a line that went straight up, straight down, straight up, straight down. He says, "And this was the highs and the lows that occurred after I had the idea and started launching the company." So I think that comes with the territory of starting a new venture, is you're going to have these incredible highs and you're going to have these just really depths of depression.
Yeah, and like I said, keeping the view on the long-term horizon line has been what's gotten me through that. It's probably the single biggest thing I've learned.
Yeah, and I know that you know, I'm a great fan of statistics and trends and everything, and I know that it does take longer than you think and more money than you think. And when you look at Dyson with his vacuum cleaner, Sarah Bakley with Spanx and like that, it was pretty much a 5-year journey for both of those. Mm. And it's usually about the third year before things start happening. I know at the end of my first year, my wife's looking at me saying, "Is this really going to happen, or are you going to go back and get a job?"
Yeah, I'm kind of at that point, too. I'm looking at my 401k nest egg saying, I may have to tap that soon.
That's right. Well, Chris, what tips or advice would you give other inventors starting up their own venture?
I think we covered a couple of them. One is to get associated with good teammates that augment your skills. The other is the relationship skills like that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And why is switching to a low-carbon economy really important to the United States at this time and to the world?
Yeah, I think we need to expand our vision, and I appreciate that adjustment in your question there, Ron, to making it worldwide, because really we're all breathing the same air. I think, zooming out for a minute, if our society is moving at such a quick pace that having a myopic perspective of just, you know, the short-term view, what's in my life and so on, I think if we just stop for a moment, and if nothing else, I'm hoping that our listeners will really ponder this. You know, what legacy do we want to leave our children and our children's children? It's my vision and my view that it would be great to have those future generations look back on this generation and said they cared enough to adjust their usage patterns so that we can inherit breathable air. I would hate to think that in the year 2050, everyone has to run around with a Scott air pack on their back because the air is that acrid and polluted. We are at a unique point in the epoch of human history, in my opinion. We have insatiable thirst for energy. Energy demand is going to double in the next 20 years. We have an opportunity to rise up and use this challenge to become greater than the very problems that we've created in the past. And those, we have the technology. We have the will. It's can we turn the ship around? I was saying to Lee a little earlier before the show started, I feel sometimes like a secondhand deckmate on the Titanic trying to get the captain's attention, the bridge's attention, saying 2 degrees to port, 2 degrees to port, you know? So I'm hopeful that everybody will embrace and do their part. I feel that most people are doing it. It's just some of the big institutions in place. They've had such forward momentum that it's kind of hard to make a subtle shift. And I believe that Verdant Energy Solutions is positioned as a bridge to help bridge that gap between the new technologies that are coming out and the existing infrastructure. If we can use the power plants that are out there and let them live out their normal amortized life cycles just by switching the fuel, and that's the cheapest cost solution, we should embrace that, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it really depends. It's really going to be the entrepreneurs like yourself that's going to help get this thing turned around. When you look at the political structure we got in the U.S. where the congressmen and the senators are always running for election, they're always looking at short-term solutions. Mm-hmm. And you got the businesses that are in place that have, you know, got a vested interest in what they're doing. It's really going to be, you know, the entrepreneurs like yourself that's going to get this thing turned around.
Thank you for that vote of confidence. I believe it as well. I've got everything riding on the line.
I hear you. Well, you know, how can our listeners get in touch with you and learn more about your business?
Well, we'd love to hear from any interested angels or listeners with questions. There are two ways. One would be to call the Verdant Energy Solutions office. Phone number is 678-461-5800. And go to the website, do a little research on what we're doing there, and that web address is www.verdant, which is V-E-R-D-A-N-T, energysolutions, plural, .com.
Okay. Well, is there anything else that we've not covered?
I think we have covered it. I want to thank both of you gentlemen very much for inviting me out to your show. I think this is a great opportunity for people to take a little time out and listen in and you know, readjust their long-term viewpoints about making a difference and leaving a legacy that we can all be proud of.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Verdant Energy being a tremendous success and BioCoal being used worldwide.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate being invited today, man. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Chris. Our listeners have really gotten some really great nuggets and learnings that they can use in their launch and journey. That's another great show, Lee. Could you thank our sponsors one more time?
Sure. Special thanks to our sponsor, Patents and More, creating the currency of innovation since 2002.
So tune in every week on Thursdays at 10 a.m. to listen live, or go to our website, which is thelaunchhour.businessradio.com, to listen at your convenience. Until next week, I'm Ron Reardon with our producer, Lee Cantor, signing off another great session of Launch.